From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move on into our 25th year on the air and move on through the Lenten season heading for Easter Sunday, which is on March the 31st this year. We're just about halfway through Lent at this point, and this is indeed the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it, and we are glad to welcome in Bobby Miller, who is the Assistant Director for Camp Pendola, coming up this summer. Bobby, good day to you.
Well, hello, Bob. How are you?
Doing fine. We share a first name, so I like you already.
As well. Me too. Yeah.
Well, thank you for taking the time to be with us. Everything all set to go with camp? Is the snow melted?
In fact, we actually got hit hard this last weekend.
Did
lots
you?
Lots of winds and lots of snow, but hopefully that will all be gone by the summertime.
Well, they said the snow was going to hit pretty low, and you were probably just about at the snow level, huh?
Yeah, we definitely got snow up there. I heard from neighbors up there by camp. They said that there's a little bit of snow and a lot of bit of wind.
Yeah, a lot of wind. Yeah, I hope it didn't bring down any of those beautiful trees you have up there.
Not either.
Yeah. Well, tell us what sort of as assistant camp director, what do you do now this time of year? Trying to put everything together for summer.
Well, right now, currently, I'm out visiting our schools and telling the kids about what we're offering this summer, getting them excited, telling their parents to register for camp because it's going to be coming up here quick. We're also letting them know that we're having family camp this week or this summer as well. So that's basically what I'm doing right now is just getting ready for camp and spreading the word.
Have you filled all your positions yet?
We have not. We're looking for a lot of positions we filled. So, like, we still need a wellness coordinator. We still need a head cook, a program director. And we're doing a little something different this year. We're actually looking for a head counselor to take on that role, as long as we always need counselors. So it's a great opportunity to come up and experience nature away from your electronics, your busy day-to-day life. There's so many amazing things you can do at camp.
How long have you been working with Camp Pendola?
I grew up as a camper and then was a counselor, and then I ran the health center a few years, and this is my first year as the assistant director.
So tell us about your experience as a camper. Were you just enthusiastic?
Of course. I was a little scary because I started out at a pretty young age. And I knew, I think, pretty much my little sister. And so we went up there not really knowing anybody. And to this day, I have one of my very best friends who I met at Camp Pendola.
Is that right?
It is, yeah. I'm in my 40s and my best friend's from Camp Pendola.
That's amazing.
Isn't it?
But I've heard those stories
before. It's a great place to meet new friends. And again, experience new things, like learn about nature and even having mass out in the woods on our overnights. You don't really get to experience that anywhere. It's just wonderful.
Wow. So how many years were you a camper?
I was a camper up into my teens until I was able to work. And then I became what they call a CIT, counselor in training.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a couple summers like that before I could become a counselor. And I worked as a counselor, I believe, for 3 years.
For how many years?
3.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And were you in college then too?
I was. I had, of course, graduated high school and then started college and spent my summers up there, camp counselor. And then after my first year of college, I had gotten my EMT. And so that first summer, I ran the health center under my new EMT lens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
Is the health center one of those things? My mom was a nurse at a health center, and You know, she'd say, you know, you'd have a quiet period of time, then all heck would break loose all at once.
It is very true. It's very true. I did finish a couple good books one summer, but then on the other hand, I was throughout the night helping out some campers, you know, had tummy aches, a bug bite that itched. I mean, you never know. You're up taking care of the camp all the time, but it's an experience.
Yeah. So what are your roles now as assistant director?
So like in the off season, I'm basically helping Jennifer with the tasks that she puts off me, and just coordinating with the schools, the parishes, getting the word out, looking up new programming, just keeping on top of everything.
And do you sit down every year and after camp's over and say, okay, what do we do right? What do we do wrong? What can we do next summer that's different? Or
oh, absolutely. And then this year I called a lot of parents, just getting input, what their children liked about camp, what they didn't like about camp, what they would like to change, not change. So that was really informative, and that was great, you know, reaching out to the parents and hearing their perspective from their children as well.
So I'm guessing you were at camp, you say you're in your 40s, so maybe 30 years ago you were at camp. Compare camp then to camp now.
Well, life's a lot different from then till now. I didn't have to get a cell phone or my video games when I went to camp. So there's that big hurdle that I have to get over to come up there. But it really hasn't changed much. I mean, we are doing a lot more spiritual things. Mm-hmm. We have a lot more, I have not experienced adoration until when I first came back in 2017 up at camp. And it was a beautiful experience, just absolutely beautiful. So we've changed a lot in that department. But other than that, a lot of camp activities that we do, like our overnights or even our polar bear swim, are stuff that I did as a kid. Mm-hmm. And there's some of the best favorite things I like to do even in my off time is go camping and backpacking and jump into a cold body of water.
do you that pond there, I've dipped my feet in that pond.
Cold.
Do you still need an ice pick to get in?
Sometimes. Well, it is the snow melt runoff and that freshwater stream that we have. So no matter how warm and hot it is during the summer, that pond is always nice and refreshing.
I think I couldn't get out of there quick enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially under polar bear plunges on Monday mornings.
Oh, wow.
It takes a brave polar bear to jump in at 7:30 in the morning.
Is there a hot shower nearby?
Oh, no. That's just hiking back up to the cabin. We'll get you all back up.
Oh, I can just imagine. Mom, Dad, come pick me up.
And the kids love it, too, though.
Oh, yeah. I know my kids, we were at Donner Lake, you know, and it's the same thing. In the summer, it doesn't matter. It's still freezing and they couldn't wait mm-hmm. to go down to the end of the dock and do the polar bear plunge.
Yep. I always tell the kids, too, have you ever been to Tahoe? It's just hot. It's always cold.
Yeah. Always. Yeah. You know, that beautiful lake. And somebody forgot to heat it.
Yep. We always make that joke, too. Our heater's broke. Sorry.
Yeah. So what's the most popular activity at camp? Is it archery?
Yes, every kid loves archery, because it's usually an activity that they don't get outside of Camp Indola. Of course, we do like sports and arts and crafts, and on Survivor Week, we do challenges. So we do a lot of that stuff outside. But yes, the archery range is definitely a big loved activity we do up there, and I encourage a lot of the kids to do it. Did you know that Miss Jen is a certified level 2 instructor?
She told us that last time. I knew she was certified. Yeah. I didn't know she was level 2. So
yeah, she's level 2.
Is she a good archer? She hit the bullseye?
Yeah, she'll get you shooting bullseyes by the end of summer, hopefully.
Wow. That's amazing. What's the skill involved in archery?
Oh, patience.
Yeah.
And being relaxed and just really focusing. It really doesn't take much, believe it or not. It's just a few different little steps you have to take and just relax, focus, let that arrow fly.
How far away are you from the target?
I'd say about 30 feet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not too far. I mean, we can challenge them to go a little further. We have a nice big archery range.
An arrow doesn't go out on Highway 49, does it?
Oh, you'd have to be a pretty good archer to hit 49 from where we... No, we have one of those archery backstops, so our arrows don't go get lost in the forest. Sometimes we get one astray, but we'll go find it.
Are there other camps or camp associations or anything that you communicate with to see what they're doing and what works for them and what doesn't?
Oh, absolutely. So Ms. Jen and I actually went up to Washington a few weeks ago and visited the CYO camps up there and got to see their programming, what they offer, their facilities. It was wonderful actually learning from these other camps and seeing what they do and what works for them and what doesn't as well. And we're also part of the American Camp Association. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of learning through them as well. And they have lots of good materials for us, what also works through nationwide camps. So it's a great, great tool we have in our pocket.
And obviously you work on safety issues too, I'm sure.
Oh, of course, of course. Safety first, always. Yeah, always, always.
Camp Pendola really has a great reputation that way.
When I ran the health center, that was always my goal. Not one camper left that they didn't want to go, you know, in a bad situation. So it's been really good up there. We do keep everyone safe, and our staff's trained very well in keeping your campers safe as well.
So describe a typical day for a camper, say an 8-year-old.
From there's
the
many different activities we'll do.
Mom and dad.
So we'll get them up in their cabin situated, do learning games to where they meet each other in their cabin, their other cabins. And then, of course, we feed them. And then after lunch, breakfast, we'll do activities like arts and crafts. We'll do sports, any kind of like sport activity, including archery. We'll do pond activities as well. We have boats and kayaks, the paddle boats and kayaks. Let's see.
Is that
we do
a
all
pond
kinds
is big enough for a kayak?
Oh, yeah. We rope half the pond off for boat activities. So we'll have our swimmers on one side and then boats on the other side.
There's a whole
boat dock with all of our boats tied to them.
I think I'll be in the boat with a jacket on.
Oh, yes. You have to wear life jackets. Even if you're a good swimmer or not, we need you to wear a life jacket when you're in the boat.
I'll let other people swim. I'm very generous with letting them have the pool.
That's nice. And then if you come up for a whole week in the midweek, we'll take you out on a backpacking trip out in the National Forest that we're surrounded by the Tahoe National Forest. Mm-hmm. And out there, we'll teach you really cool skills like how to shelter build, how to filter water out of a freshwater stream. And luckily, since we've had enough rain this year, we get to do probably campfires. And so we'll teach them how to safely build campfires and how to cook over a campfire and do one of the best things ever and make s'more tortillas, or we call s'more tortillas. Yeah, the campers really love those. It's just it's a really good skills a lot of these kids don't get to experience anymore.
So, yeah, I would be afraid after all the wildfires we've had in California the last few years that they would just permanently ban, campfires. But apparently that hasn't happened.
You would think so, but we have all of our staff go and get fire permits.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to actually watch videos and do a little training themselves to safely, properly build campfires out there. And they are within pits and everything's cleared around from them. So again, we're really into safety because we don't you don't want to be part of the problem.
And you don't build a fire if it's windy and et cetera.
Right. Of course. Of course. Yeah. We check our fire conditions every day.
I know. I mean, it's such a part of camp, not only camp, but just of camping to have a campfire, you know, it'd be sad to see it go. And I actually give people a lot of credit for saying, okay, there's a way to do this safely. We're not really aware that any of the major blazes we've had recently were caused by campfires.
And that's another thing we teach these children and our staff is how to properly maintain and build campfires. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, is the weather appropriate? like you said, is it windy? We don't do it then.
Yeah.
So we start a Sunday off too with our campfire in camp, and we do fun skits and sing songs. So all kids get to experience a campfire at camp because we do have a whole campfire facility area for that.
And this year you're going to have a priest on site during the week. Is that right?
Every week. We sure are. And our first week is going to be Lost in Space with Father Dean Marshall.
It's one of my favorite weeks.
He is. He knows everything about the night sky. And I absolutely love listening to Father Dean. He can point out all the different constellations, the planets. We even got to see Starlink last year.
Wow.
We're all like, what is that? We turn off all the lights in Camp Indola. And since we don't have any neighbors or real light pollution at all around there, you really get to experience the night sky. And I've heard from multiple different campers that they've never seen stars alone the way that they've seen them up at camp.
Yeah, it's really true. You know, you go out some nights and in any town, you know, I mean, we have streetlights for a reason, you know, as much
of
as
course.
I've tried to sort of reposition them and change them some, we have them for a good reason, but boy, you get out in the country where there is, as you say, no light pollution, and it's a completely mm-hmm. different sky.
It really is. It really is. And you can see the Milky Way on certain nights, and it's just incredible. It's just an experience I wish everybody could see.
Yeah, I would love to hear Father Dean talk about it. Maybe we'll get him on the program to talk about it because, you know, the Vatican has always been some of the first astronomers were from the Vatican, you know.
He's very knowledgeable in it, and I would definitely push for that, and I would love to hear his talk on it as well. Because, again, it's one of my favorite things to do is listen to Father Dean talk about the night sky.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So you have a cook position open. Tell us what that entails, because that's an important part of camp for sure.
It is a very important part of camp. They would basically be running our kitchen, planning our meals, ordering the food. And then we have a crew that would, of course, work with the head cook, but they're basically responsible for running our kitchen.
And so is that a 24/7 job? They're doing all three meals?
All three meals. Yeah.
But it's not 7 days a week, right?
No, we are off Saturdays. So it would basically be Sunday night because we need dinner because they arrive in Sunday afternoon through Friday evening.
So they could actually leave on a Friday evening if, let's say, they lived in the Sacramento area and get home and have Friday night and all day Saturday and Saturday night and then get back
up. And don't have to be back till Sunday afternoon, correct?
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And the same for counselors, right?
That's the same for all of us. Yeah, we try to leave Friday night. We also give the option if you'd like to stay as a staff member over the weekend if mm-hmm. you want to save gas and be alone up at Camp Indola.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful spot.
It is. It's very nice and quiet, too, with no campers, of course. So a day off would be very peaceful.
Yeah. Now, when do you have mass?
We have mass every Sunday for sure. Soon as everybody gets there.
After the campers arrive. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. After all the campers arrive, we have mass, and that's what we start with is mass.
Is it usually in the chapel or usually outdoors?
It is usually in the chapel, but if it gets too hot, we will move it outside in the fresh air. And then we do offer daily mass, and that's up to whoever the priest is that week.
Wow.
About what time we do that, either in the morning, afternoon, or night. So again, that's up to the priest. And then we do have them go out to the campsites in the overnights, and we will do mass out in the forest at our campsites.
I bet that's very moving.
It is very moving. It's amazing.
To be out in
to have
in
mass
God's
out
creation,
in nature.
And yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Surrounded by giant trees.
I know the times I've been up in the California redwoods up north, I think, wow. One place has a cathedral tree, and I think it's very appropriate. You know, it's nature's cathedral, if you will. You know,
it really is, and that's what I feel about Camp Indola too. Like, it's always been special to me for that reason too. It's like you're just out in God's creation. This is what God created for us, and then to have such a special thing like Mass out in nature, it's an amazing experience. It really is.
So. Talk a little bit about the role of the counselors. You still need some counselors, right?
Yes. So our counselors will be with our kids. It's one of the hardest positions, honestly. They're with our kids 24/7. And we do offer a week and a half training. So we'll prepare you quite well for the summer up ahead. So you're there for these kids, emotionally, spiritual, sometimes physical needs, and just encouraging me. You can do this. You are that positive influence in these children's lives, all while having a great time at Camp Indola. And these kids will always remember you. I still remember my counselors when I was a kid, and they were great influences on my life as well. So we're looking for really positive people to, like, influence our campers in a great way like that.
And they need to be at least 18, graduated from high school.
Correct. Yeah. Entering college, out of high school, 18 and older.
And the camp dates generally work around whatever time college, whether it's a state university or the UCs or a community colleges, when their start dates are.
We're starting our training on June 12th and we're going through the 21st. So again, it's a week and a half. If there are a few days that they miss, we can work around that as well. We'll catch them up somehow, but we're willing to work with people if this is what they would like to do. It's also a great way to save money, believe it or not, because you're coming up and staying with us, and we're housing you, we're feeding you, we're teaching you all kinds of great experiences that you can go out in the big world and use in your other jobs as well. So camp, you can pretty much survive anywhere.
Yeah, you don't have any expenses or no way to spend your money, and you are getting a good salary.
Exactly. We're paying great. We're actually one of the best paying camps in California. So it is a great way to save money through the summer and a great experience. And it looks great on your resume as well.
Oh, sure it does. Yeah, absolutely. So do you need male, female, or both?
We need both. We need both.
Describe, if you would, the various weeks of camp you're going to have this summer and who they're designed for.
So we are going to have 4 full weeks, and that would be Lost in Space with Father Dean Marshall the first week, and that starts June 23rd. And then the following week is just our mini week, and it's a half week. We're offering to children to come up and experience. If they're a little timid about coming up for a whole week, we have the opportunity to come up and experience it for a half week. And we're doing that theme as Passport to Fun. So come on up and stamp those passports at camp. Followed by an all-girls week. And the girls are always so excited about this one. And we're doing a little spin off the Taylor Swift Eras tour. So we're doing like a little friendship tour, lots of singing, dancing, and of course, lots of friendship bracelets. They love those, let me tell you. And then followed by that, we will be doing our Survivor Week. And that is July 14th through the 19th, where we do a lot of competitions, racing. We'll do like build a boat and see who's lasts the longest on the water, all kinds of fun little activities that little competitions, but of course nobody's voted off. So everyone's a winner at Camp Indola. Oh, and then followed by that, we'll have the co-ed Invaders of the Night. And that is for our 7th grade and up. That's our teen week. And that is a little extra special because throughout the week, we end up staying up later and later. And of course, we let them sleep in later because we all know teenagers love to sleep in. But we do a lot of fun activities at night, including games where they're having to test out their night vision, because we'll do like games at night up on the hillside with no light. So we're trying to search and find different things and without being tagged by the staff members. It's actually a lot of fun. And we also have a black light dance and dinner. So everything's done on black lights and it's all glowing. It's really cool, actually. And that's more focused around our teenagers. And then, of course, this summer we are offering family camp, and that'll be the weekend after 4th of July. And that gives everyone the opportunity to come on up with their family and experience Camp Indola. Because I know a lot of family or a lot of parents are always saying how much they want to stay and do camp too. Well, here's your opportunity, parents. Come on up. Stay with us for a weekend.
And when will that be?
That is the weekend right after the 4th of July. Very good. It's the 5th through the 7th, I believe.
Like a three-day weekend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very good. And people could sign up at pendola.org?
That is where you sign up, is pendola.org, yes.
P-E-N-D-O-L-A, pendola.org, named after the Pendola family who donated the property, over 60 years ago?
Yeah, it's been a while. And the Pendola Ranch is still up there and still going.
Yeah, it's
a beautiful place.
It's just wonderful stuff. It's wonderful stuff. You know, you have to be mm-hmm. something right for something to last 60 years.
I know.
It is a very special place. Yeah, I want
to
talk to one of the first campers. If there's some around, it would be, they have to be some around.
I'll start looking for them. We've connected through social media with quite a few people from back in the day as well. I still keep in touch with a lot of my camper friends and all the staff members that were staff when I was a camper too. I'm still pretty good friends with a lot of them via social media as well. It's amazing what social media has brought out.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I bet. Well, Bobby, it's great to talk with you. Thanks for all you do. God's blessings to you and all the people at Camp Pendola and connected with it. And we'll look forward to our past.
Well, thank you so much.
Soon.
It's been an honor talking to you.
Oh, you too, Bobby. Thanks so much. That's Bobby Miller, who is the assistant counselor, assistant director of Camp Pendola. Again, Pendola, P-E-N-D-O-L-A, pendola.org. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegan, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegan, for that wonderful introduction and for all you have done and continue to do for our great Diocese of Sacramento and for our Catholic Church all over the world. Well, we had a chance to sit down with Katita Schloman, who is the Safe Environment Coordinator for the Diocese of Sacramento, and we're going to bring you that interview now. But first, I want to point out that the Catholic Herald, the current Catholic Herald for the March-April edition that just came out, also deals with safe environment here in our church and in our schools. So be sure and check out the Catholic Herald, either picking up the magazine or reading it. It is available online as well. So here is the interview with the Safe Environment Coordinator, Katita Schloman. Come in, Katita Schloman, who is the Safe Environment Coordinator. Is that the correct title?
That is the correct title.
It has been that title for quite a while now.
It has. So.
And your work doesn't stop?
Nope. Safe Environment is kind of 24/7, around the clock. We obviously have busier times of the year, when school starts back up in session.
Pull that mic just a little bit closer there. There you go. Perfect. You have the gold microphone today.
Okay.
This all came out of the charter in Dallas, in 2001?
2002. So, yep, over 20 years ago. And that charter was really written as a guideline, kind of a playbook for what dioceses need to do. There's specific articles in that charter that every diocese is audited against every single year.
Every year you're audited.
Yes, yeah. Every year.
To audited, you usually think of audits, you think of numbers and finances and that kind of thing. This is an audit to make sure you are following all the guidelines, regulations, rules, whatever that were put down in that charter for the protection of young people.
That's right. And it's important to note that it's an outside auditing agency. Right. So there are numbers, there are statistics, there, we have to account for how many trained, how many completed child abuse recognition and reporting training, how many completed background checks. We have numbers. But that outside auditing agency is the agency that audits every single diocese. So there's consistency. Mm-hmm. They understand the charter and are always looking for, that consistency in terms of how a diocese sets up their safe environment department.
And they don't pull any punches.
No.
They're not going to just sugarcoat the thing.
No, they really don't. They hold us all accountable, which is good, and I feel like if we are doing our collective job effectively, then, the audit is an opportunity to always be looking at our practices. Have we put in place the best practices? Are there things we need to consider? Which it's good. That's good. Safe environment, and Bishop has said this, it's not stagnant. It is always changing. Mm-hmm. We're always looking to ensure that we're doing everything we possibly can.
Well, in all of human history, knowledge about these sorts of things has changed over time.
That's right.
And presumably, you hear that sometimes. Well, what we believed or thought in the 70s or the 60s or the 80s or 90s isn't what we believe today. This charter started, as you said, in 2002, so we're coming up on 22 years now. Are there things, has the charter itself been revised?
So there have been slight revisions to the charter. I believe there was one in, I think there have been two, 2011 and I think again in 2018. The revisions were slight, but one of the revisions included the inclusion of vulnerable adults in the charter, the language in the charter. So, you know, as we move through audits from that point forward, auditors are looking for inclusion of specific language and policy. And every third year is part of that audit process. The auditors are here physically for us here at the Pastoral Center. They meet with a whole group of people that they've identified that they want to sit down and speak with. They're usually here for about 3 or 4 days. And for every response we provide them related to our answers in the audit, we have to provide documentation to it to substantiate what our response is. So it's thorough.
Do you learn things from the auditors too? Not where the intent wasn't there, but we think that this is a better path or this is a better way to do things.
They'll follow up with kind of a management letter, you know, and suggestions and maybe things that they've seen. A few years back, reached out to them post-audit because I wanted to see, is there a way that we can kind of do our own parish audit, you know, that's not just a yearly audit notice, but is more in depth, more in detail. And they were really very helpful in saying, well, this is what some other dioceses have done. And here's some things that you could, you know, look to use. But again, I really think their purpose for us is to, keep us on the straight and narrow related to the charter, but also, you know, make us self-reflect and make sure we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing. Are there things that we can improve upon?
So so many of the cases that come to light are, this isn't dismissing them in any way, are old, 20, 30, 40 years old. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those didn't come to light for 20 or 30, 40, 40 years, not just to our awareness, but the repressed memory and all these things that you hear about. Do we know yet about the effects of the, you know, it seems that, I mean, obviously the numbers are down since 2002, but do we know yet all the fruit of this or not?
So it would be hard to kind of quantify that, you know. We can't say, I because you did this, I didn't abuse somebody.
Right.
You know,
right.
it's very difficult. So I always kind of point to what I do know. I know that our opt-out numbers of parents opting out of our training every year has gone down over the years substantially.
They just say, we're not going to participate, we're not going to...
That they just didn't want their child receiving the training.
Uh-huh.
The idea with when that happens is that they will be provided with the lessons for them to reflect and maybe teach them at home. We want those trainings being done. So I've seen the opt-out numbers drop over the years. I've seen really an effort between my department, our lay personnel department, in really holding our parishes and our schools accountable for employee clearances and volunteer clearances, and those numbers going up in terms of how many people are printed and complete their training. So those are the things we can point to. We know that those good numbers are up. I firmly believe in the power of educating and informing. So I do believe that all of those efforts have played into that too. When we look at formation of clergy, you know, pre-safe environment, it really didn't happen, but now it is part. It's part of everyone's language now. So
the one thing, and it can't, we don't seem to be able to control it, we can control or help to reduce the number by having a safe environment program, mm-hmm. by having the circle of grace and all these things, and by real careful screening of employees and volunteers and all that. But the one thing that we haven't, not the church, but society hasn't, because we see it everywhere. I mean, it's not unique to the Catholic Church. But the one thing society hasn't been able to do is to make the abuser not want to abuse, you know? And that's the mystery, I guess, is what causes these, you know, maybe we can make it more difficult for them to abuse and all those things, but there are still people out there that's what they want to do, and we just haven't been able to, not as a church, as a society or even the medical field, to make that go away. Yeah.
No, and I don't believe we can.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we look at kind of that pattern of abuse, and we look back on what happened pre that abuse, there's so many warning signs and so many opportunities at that moment when we hear about boundary violations, when we, you know, as a parent kind of feel like something's not quite right, you know, those are the opportunities to step in. And, you know, it, we don't want to wait until something has happened. So that's one of the great things about that training that we have. Safe Haven is, it really goes in great detail about grooming techniques and what that appears like, and you know, how somebody will go about in grooming a child, and you know, there's a misconception that, oh, you know, it's gonna abuse is gonna happen in, you know, right away.
Right.
Somebody can groom someone for years and years and just slowly chip away.
So there's something that I learned, mm-hmm. that it never occurred. I would have assumed that it's, you know, it would happen right away,
right.
You know, and in some people it does, but I had never even heard the term grooming, and to think that this is a process, and this is and yet, you know, in my childhood it was something we weren't looking for. My parents weren't looking for it, and never even crossed our minds. And you look back now, and you can, I think almost any human being can identify times where there were some boundary problems or some grooming going on, and maybe it didn't lead, you know, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. All the way. But and you shake your head and say, wow.
And it's slow and gradual, you know, it's that opportunity for that predator really to test the waters and see how far they can go with this.
Yeah, and the other thing that we've learned, I think, is it's almost always somebody known to the person, you know, even a family member.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right. And that, you know, part of that grooming is how that person kind of ingratiates themselves, mm-hmm. into that child's family,
sure.
and gains that trust
of
the parents and those around the child.
Almost to the point where the parent would feel guilty even having the thought that, oh, this person could be doing wanting to do
Our
this.
Our minds don't want to go there.
No, you don't.
We really don't. And, you know, we want to be trusting of people, but we really have to be on guard.
Yeah. So what's the toughest part of your job?
Goodness, the velocity of how many people we train, which is actually the good part of my job too, because I'm very proud of what we do. But just the velocity, the numbers of reportings that come in from DOJ and FBI, the numbers of trainings that are conducted, kind of the administrative component.
So do you work with DOJ and the FBI?
So we do. They're as being able to receive somebody's criminal background, when somebody goes to be printed, we have to have a designated custodian of records on file, and that would be myself and our background check clerk who processes those reports daily.
So let's say we're talking about a new employee. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have all kinds of privacy considerations as well. Does the employee have to, or potential employee, have to agree to have their record checked?
Yep. So they, when somebody goes for live scan fingerprinting, and this is why there's the need for maybe multiple to be printed for coaching Little League, and then for your employer, and then for volunteering at your church. When you go for printing, you're going with the receiving agency's designated form, and you're saying, I am authorizing this agency to receive my criminal background. Mm-hmm. That's why information can't be shared. Right. I can't send a clearance, you know, for somebody's employment outside of the diocese, or even for volunteering at, you know, the public school system. I can't provide that. And vice versa. We couldn't accept a clearance from somebody else. We have to do it on our own.
Okay. And it's all available through, who's it go through, the Department of Justice?
So it goes through, for employees, we clear through the Department of Justice and FBI, and those reports come directly to us.
So it's all federal?
Mm-hmm. State
DOJ as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then for volunteers, it's all done through state DOJ. I want to add that everyone who has completed printing for the diocese, every time someone is printed, their prints are attached to subsequent arrest notifications. So within hours of an arrest being made, we're able to respond and make an adjustment, whether that be an employment or their ability to volunteer. So, and those decisions in terms of adjusting volunteer status are not arbitrary. You know, we have a very set internal protocol that we follow, and to create consistency, you know, across everything.
So. Do you get pushback from people who say, hey, I'm just driving on a field trip. I'm a good guy.
Yes.
I'm doing the right thing here.
Yes, we do. And, you know, those maybe early on when I was brand new, it was hard to kind of address that pushback. But, you know, those are the requirements, and if that's what you want to do, then you need to complete your printing.
Well, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, going through security at the airport, you know, and you're saying, I'm not carrying weapons, you know.
Right.
And yet at the same token, you're saying, well, they're keeping this guy behind me in line from carrying a gun on the plane,
right.
You know.
That's right. It's for everybody's safety.
Yeah.
It really is. And, you know, we do get pushback, but you know, the bulk of our volunteers are at our diocesan schools. That's where the majority of our volunteering comes from. Most of the parents are well aware that, you know, this is a requirement.
The screening is able to screen a lot, mm-hmm. and the only people you miss are the ones that were never caught, mm-hmm. or haven't yet offended.
And that's why it's really important to not take just a background check at face value. You know, it's really, I always look at it as safe environment is kind of a three-legged stool, you know, and we've got fingerprinting in our background, we've got our child abuse recognition and reporting training, but we also train the children. So really trying to take all three of those into consideration is what's important.
And I would think one of the difficult things is, and we're both parents, mm-hmm. and, you know, when your kids are little and somebody, a sociable event or something, you just meet somebody on the street, maybe they're friends of the family or something, and they say, hey, Maeve, how are you? And she's kind of hiding behind your thigh, and they're 4 years old, and you want them to be polite and forthcoming and engage, if you will. And I think it must be a real delicate balance. You don't want your child to be afraid of everybody.
That's right.
But at the same token,
you don't want to inadvertently put them in a position where they're accepting of something where they shouldn't be.
Exactly.
So it is. It's a very difficult, it's difficult. It's difficult. And, You know, again, if we're aware kind of what boundary violations look like, if we're aware of what grooming looks like, those are all the keys to, you know, helping to protect our children.
So do you have parents calling you and saying, we think this is going on?
So it's not so much where we would get a parent. It's usually it would come from either the pastor, the principal, you know, somebody who would say, you know, we're just not uncomfortable. We also need to remember there is no right to volunteer.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so if there is something that volunteer, whether it's in one of our ministries at our parishes or at our schools, that is just not a good fit, then they're not a good fit. And, you know, they can be removed from volunteering. While maybe it's not so even a safe environment issue,
right.
But that they're just a problematic. They can, you know, the pastor has that right. The principal has that right to say, this just isn't a good fit, you know, for right now. And let's have you step aside.
So you, in the last, for the last audit, mm-hmm. more than 23,000 children were trained in Circle of Grace.
That's
and more
right.
than 14,000 adults completed training or background checks.
That's right, and those are pretty
much. Did you do every one of those personally?
Those are pretty much our numbers every year.
Wow.
Yeah, so it.
I didn't realize the scope of that.
So Circle of Grace is taught every single year, and so when you think collectively amongst all of our parishes and all of our schools, those are that's
sure.
a large number. So we ask that those lessons are taught every fall, you know, at the schools and parishes.
Talk a little bit. We've only got a couple minutes, but what's encompassed in Circle of Grace?
So Circle of Grace is really about teaching a child what a trusted adult looks like and kind of what a boundary violation would feel like and how to kind of trust your instinct on something and when it's time to go to somebody with some help.
Mm-hmm.
So the lessons are very gentle in nature. A lot of parents initially thought it was sex education,
mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's really really designed to just gradually teach a child about knowing what's right and what's wrong and who they're going to let be close to them.
Very good. Well, Katita, I think you have the toughest job in the building.
I do love my job very much.
I can tell.
I really do. And I think collectively, you know, we've worked very hard to not make safe environment, you know, the upstairs office in the corner that nobody
yeah.
wants to deal with.
Yeah.
But, you know, that safe environment is an integral part of our faith community. It's not an addition to forming our children, but part of.
Part of, yeah. Mm-hmm. So phone numbers, contact, how?
So there is, on the diocesan website, there's a direct link on the homepage, and it says Protecting Our Children, and that will take you to all of the information related to everything safe environment, from codes of conduct to trainings and resources as well.
The diocese website is scd.org, and it is comprehensive. You can even find the Bishop's Hour there. You can find everything there, and it's very easy to remember. Or just Google Sacramento Catholic Diocese, and it will pop up. Katita, always a joy to see you. Thanks
Thank
so much
you.
For all you do.
Oh, you're welcome.
Much appreciated.
Thank you, Bob.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
Thank you.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2000. 2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of America, Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
We stand and lift up our hands for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship Him now. How great, how awesome is He? And together we sing. Bow down.